panel says the world must keep fossil fuel emissions to around 1 trillion tons of carbon dioxide. At current emissions rates, the amount will be reached in just 30 years, maybe even less. Less than $400 billion a year is being spent to reduce emissions or adapt to climate change. By contrast, energy corporations are spending over $600 billion to find new sources of carbon dioxide extraction, and governments are spending the same amount on subsidizing fossil fuel consumption. The IPCC's report is its fifth and final assessment on climate change ahead of global negotiations in Paris next year. United Nations climate talks are scheduled to be held in Lima, Peru, next month.
Mexican authorities Tuesday captured the fugitive former mayor wanted for his role in the abduction of 43 students in late September. The ex-mayor of Iguala in Mexico's southern state of Guerrero, José Luis Abarca, and his wife, María de los Ángeles Pineda, were captured in a pre-dawn raid on the house where they were staying in Mexico City's popular working-class district of Iztapalac. According to media reports, federal police were tipped off to their location by two neighbors. At least three arrest warrants have been issued for Abarca for the crimes of homicide, attempted homicide, and abduction.
On this Jacob's ladder, the only way up is down. One step from disaster.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Woman, so that's smart. The problem, though, is that I'm, and I've said this on Sunday, if I believe, and I firmly believe this, if we did not have an African-American president in the White House as we speak right now, Mary Landrieu would not be in trouble. Mm. Kay Hagan would not be in any kind of trouble. Michelle Nunn would win overwhelmingly. And, you know, maybe Alison Lundegren-Rumsfeld would do well. I think that's the case. I absolutely believe that because I think there is still. And by the way, racism is not just a Southern problem. If you don't believe me, you know, look at the Boston busing riots. That happened in Boston, not in Charleston. So, you know, the idea that race does not play into this is absolutely a factor. It certainly is.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indus, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet Radio for Smart Aboriginal Radio.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Let's go to Anthony joining us from San Diego. Good morning, Republican line.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yes, I would just like to say that the Republicans, and I'm a Republican, please do not overreach. I know they're going to overreach, but I'm telling you, if you advocate for the repeal of Obamacare and you get too extreme, then Hillary Clinton will be elected president in 2016. This is about race. The Republicans hate that nigger Obama.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. We're not going to use that kind of language as we move on to Beverly in Cary, North Carolina. You can certainly make your point, but you cross the line when you use language like that. And so to our viewers and listeners, I want to apologize. Beverly, go ahead.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
Internet radio for smarter.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Soliton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. You have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under colonial, imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neo-fascist, and anti-Mother Nature oppression. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from Aboriginal Newswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my executive producer and studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Because, you know, I'm pretty much ensconced, you know, here in the belly of the beast, in unceded territorial, quarters of North America. You know, they just had what they call election, the midterm elections here, and for 2014, the big presidential contest will be, 2016. So, you know, it's important, and it was a complete washout in terms of, you know, how it went down. I mean, voting, at least for my generation anyway, voting hasn't been the same since Bush the Second. And, you know, we don't have to get into a huge discussion about that. Literate, you should already know what I'm talking about. You should already be aware of what I'm talking about. You know, the whole idea of voting while black, right? You know, read Greg Palast. I mean, this is how most Americans found out who Greg Palast was. You know, I mean, he's a Yank, but in order for him to be published, he had to go to the UK. Well, that was before they started spying on their lawyers. Have you heard about that one? If you are a solicitor in the UK, you can expect MI5, MI6, special branch, anyone who decides that they want to peek into your client solicitor conversations. Your conversations are no longer your conversations anywhere. I mean, you're not even able to even get into a taxi in London without it being recorded, right? Filmed and recorded in some cases, right? So, you know, you can't go on the tube, you can't go get a pack of fags, you can't go get a liter of Jersey, nothing. Nothing. You can't do a fucking thing. You can't sneak over to your mistress's, flat, nothing. You can't do anything in the UK, anywhere within the environs of the Crown, right, without being recorded. So the question then has to be, how much crime has actually been stopped by this? Every study I've seen internationally and in the United Kingdom says zilch. Crime has gone up as the poverty has gone up. As long as Cameron has continued to cut, right, whether it's national health, whether it's, he's not cutting from the military. Right, Luke? He's not cutting from the military, but he's cutting all of these social programs. And, you know, you really have to ask yourself, where's this going? You know, I mean, he's making cuts, right? All along the Anglophone world, they're all making cuts. They're making cuts in the States. They're making cuts in the UK. They're making cuts in Australasia, right? I'm including New Zealand, right? You know, I mean, in Great Britain itself, you know, and I'm including Northern Ireland in this, you know, people are suffering. They're doing really fucking bad. You know, but Canada wants to get into the war thing. And they've just had some freak, you know, run an attack up there, of which, you know, PM Harper, he's just going to run with. And we all know that he's, you know, doing what he's being, you know, he's being told by his American handlers. And that is the case, and it always has been the goddamn case. You know, Canadian intelligence has always just done what the hell they've been told. They've complained about this. They've always done what they've been told by their big brothers further south. You know, why they allow this, why they put up with it, your guess is as good as mine. But it's a pretty sure bet that, whatever the hell they want down here, he's going to give them. They're going to get it. So, you know, I mean, you know, they're going to do whatever they want to do. They're doing whatever they want to do. You know, I was watching, what I tell you was, Luke, The Blacklist, the thing with James Spader, right? Well, wasn't he one of the Rat Pack, James Spader? I suppose he was. He's part of that generation of U.S. actors, right? Well, he's back, and he's got a show called The Blacklist. It's an intelligence thing. So, you know, I suppose we're looking at the second season of this online now, because my wife is into it. And he's this... I think he was an intelligence person himself, but he's this international criminal mastermind. And I know we're going on a tangent, but roll with me. And it's just, you know, good PR, I suppose, for the Bureau, for Mossad, because, you know, here the second season, I saw a few episodes from the first one, and they had somebody who was agency, right? She was representing CIA. And then in this one, you know, because she's gone now, so now they got somebody in there who's also, you know, a sister, dark woman. You said she's Farsi, right? Yeah, so she's representing Mossad. You know what? So this woman, whatever she is, she's played, because she could be South Asian, you know. She's supposed to be an Iranian who's working for Mossad. And this is on, you know, who is liaison to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is supposed to be the U.S. Domestic Service, but it turns out is in Tel Aviv. It turns out, I suppose, is in, I suppose they're working with Special Branch. That would be their, their compadres, right? The FBI is in Africa. Why are they in Africa? Who's paying for this? But the first question is, why are they in Africa to begin with? Because remember, when they had that mall attack, and I'm going to embarrass myself right now because I do not remember which country this was. But regardless of which country it was, it doesn't matter. Be it Uganda, be it Nigeria, be it Sierra Leone, you know, east, west, north, south, they go where they want to go. They're in Hong Kong. They're in Japan. What other country has an office? I'm not talking about liaison offices. I'm talking about has an office in the U.S. What intelligence agency, including the British, has an office above ground in the U.S.? What foreign military bases are in the U.S.? Who's paying for this? Now, they just elected, and I say they because I'm talking about the Euro settlers and all the other suckers who believe in the system. They just voted in those who voted because it was only what, Luke, 36.6 when that came, because I heard that on NPR, National Public Radio for our international listeners, that only 36.6 of the actual eligible voters, I mean those people who are registered to vote, not those who are of age to vote and do not, because for some strange reason, they don't want to write it into law here that you have to vote. You know, they write it into law here that you can't do wizardry or something, you know, in Florida. But you cannot legislate that you must participate once you're past a certain age, that you must participate within the voting process. It's not mandated here. It's at will. So, you know, a whole lot of folks said they weren't going to fucking vote. But of those that voted, you know, there's a lot of talk right now. There's a lot of chatter going about how the Democrats fucked this up. You know, how the Democrats lost this. And, you know, there is no magic one answer to this. I mean, there's several things. But there's one thing that I didn't hear any goddamn buddy talk about. And I'm going to lay it out for you right here as I see it. Because look at what did pass in terms of the other legislation. You know, you have Prop 47, which is going to make some changes, hopefully, if they actually go through with it and if they do it correctly. It's going to make some changes to the mass incarceration situation of a lot of our brothers and sisters and a lot of our poor white brothers and sisters, you know, down there in California. Now, up in Washington State above me, right before Canada, right before Portlandia, you got Washington State. And they just voted in a gun control measure, which, you know, a lot of people were surprised because folks I know up there said that on cable television, and I suppose whatever they were showing in the pubs, because that was the other chatter that I heard, that they kept seeing the same repeated, I mean, incessantly, over and over and over again, the same fucking ad against this proposition that was going to deal with gun control. And, you know, it didn't work. They spent tons of money and it didn't work. And, you know, the timing might have had to do with the fact that we had a young, native brother here, Jason Freiberg. I don't know what was wrong with him. And I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't really followed the case. I'm concerned, you know, I want to know why he went the way he did, but I remember writing another case about another Native American man. I believe he was a Chippewa. Jeff Weezy, believe his name was. He just did total damage to his reservation over in Minnesota. But he was a neo-Nazi that was floating around on neo-Nazi sites. He didn't relate to Indian life. He didn't relate to being Native really at all. He considered himself to be white. And he was, you know, nominally, I suppose, you know, when you read the piece that I have about it, on my own, aboriginalwriter.wordpress.com, you know, that's my personal site. And, you know, talks about white supremacy, you know, in Indian country. And, you know, that was, you know, he had troubles at home, obviously. You know, he came from a broken home. You know, I mean, all of those usual factors were there. All of those coexisting dynamics were there. But it didn't explain why he was moving over to white supremacist ideology. You know, it's not a big surprise that they accepted him You know, I've known a handful of black neo-Nazis in my lifetime. You know, I mean, they were accepted by a handful of other neo-Nazis. You know, that's why we shouldn't be surprised about what happened with Mia Love over here in the land of Mormonism. You know, we shouldn't be surprised. They're trying to win the GOP. You understand? And any person of color, that, especially if they're going to go so far as to go into Mormonism. You know, Mormonism? I mean, niggas weren't even considered human beings until what? About 10 years ago? 15 years ago with them? And you're going to tell me that those attitudes just went away because they decided, the elders decided to change their mind? No. Mitt Romney, the bishop, Mitt Romney, is a Mormon. And I'm not, you know, so's Glenn Beck. And you don't hear me making comments about their underwear. You don't hear me making comments about Kolob. None of that. That's their belief. I think it's kooky, like every goddamn religion. I think they're all kooky. Name one. I think they're all stupid. Yeah, I know there's deeper, you know, metaphysical teachings and what have you. But I mean, come on, man. Let's get down with fucking reality. The majority of people who believe in religion do not live in goddamn reality. And most Republicans do not live in fucking reality. And they're a bunch of hypocritical sons of bitches. Now, I was talking about Mia Love. Now, supposedly, she's been getting KKK shit sent to her crib. Her and her husband. I don't know who she's married to. I don't know if he's black or white. I haven't looked. I don't care. You know, I mean, yeah, you know, Shonda Rhimes is making it, I suppose, okay now, feel that they now have carte blanche to just, you know, have their pick in, you know, their pick of the litter now with these white Republicans who are willing to fuck with them. But see, the thing about it is, each one of those sisters, if you ask them what the fuck they're yeah, I'm going to say straight out, I don't give a fuck about Shonda Rhimes. You know, she got dissed by the New York fucking Times, and we're going to get to them too before I go out of here. The New York Times has really just pulled the fucking sheets, not off, but on. You dig what I'm saying? You know, I mean, first they dissed Mike Brown. They did not, you know, they were not objective. They were not reporting that case at all. All right? They helped put, you know, the kibosh on the indictment of Darren Wilson. They helped, you know, fuck that up completely. All right? Then you got David Brooks, who I lost respect for him a long goddamn time ago, because, you know, he had a piece where he was defending the bell curve and the whole premise behind it. So right there, you know, done. You know, like someone wanted to argue me just a few days ago about William Shockley. You know, what was it? A transistor guy, right? I forgot what it was that he won the Nobel for. I know he was a scientist, but he was a racist son of a bitch. You know, and I remember I actually owned the copy of Playboy magazine where they sent a black they sent a black man. I don't remember if he had a doctorate or not, but they sent a black journalist, a writer, to interview him for the magazine. And he completely flipped out when he found out that he was black, and then put him through, I believe it was, two rounds of intelligence tests before he would agree to interview him. And he passed the test and went through, like, the next, you know, when they finally came face to face, the next 35, 45 minutes, you know, basically trying to figure out why this nigga was so smart. Because he was able to pass whatever Europocentric bullshit intelligence test that he was able to manufacture, right? So for those of you who don't remember William Shockley, aren't old enough, just look him up. Totally racist son of a bitch. And so were the two motherfuckers that wrote The Bell Curve. Murray and can't remember the other one, because one passed on some time ago. Regardless, Liberty Lobby bullshit, whatever. Ron Paul type bullshit, whatever, right? David Brooks, who did not tell anybody, or at least he certainly didn't tell the goddamn readers at the Times or any place else that he writes for, that his son is serving in the, you know, IDF, in the Israeli Defense Force, right? Or force is, I suppose, yeah? But then Rahm Emanuel, he's the mayor of Chicago, right? I mean, he fucking served in the IDF. He actually stepped out of politics. He left his job to go fight in the goddamn IDF. I think he's a lieutenant or something. Who, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, James Inhofe is totally, you know, denying what is right there in front of us, that the earth, that mama is hurting, and that, you know, there needs to be a change, and he was elected. And now he's going to run, you know, the commission that makes decisions for what happens with the environment here. Right? How did that happen? Somebody who was, you know, is out here against abortion. I can't remember his name, and it doesn't matter. What? You know full well, you know, I internationally, you asked me something like that. But for what's happening exactly right here, I know what's happening. But for these clowns that are actually doing it, I don't remember all of these names. I can't remember the names of all of these fools. You know, here it is. He's a Republican. GOP stalwart. Hardcore conservative. Family values man. Pushes this nonsense all the goddamn time, right? And it is nonsense. When it's coming from somebody that doesn't fucking live it his goddamn self. This son of a bitch was having a fucking affair. And this woman, and he didn't say that the woman was a liar. He just said that the rest of us didn't understand what was going on with his love affair. With his sinning. Because while he's out here telling people that he's against abortion, he wants to stop Planned Parenthood and what have you, he fucking strong-armed his girl into having an abortion. It's just like with Newt Gingrich. That son of a bitch, you know, who the fuck can take that son of a bitch fucking seriously? History teacher, my goddamn ass. You know, that son of a, that motherfucker was caught getting a blowjob in the goddamn congressional parking lot and shit from his fucking aide. Fuck him. Fuck him. He's a Catholic now. Yeah, well, how did he become Catholic? Because he converted, because the chick that he's married to now is the chick he was fucking around with on his last wife. Family values. Family values, my ass, man. Conservative honesty. Whatever. What the fuck ever, man. It's just a lot of talk. It's just a lot of talk. It's just a lot of grandstanding and a lot of talk. These motherfucking clowns are not serious. They never were motherfucking serious. You understand what I'm saying? They were never serious to fucking begin with. But, you know, where am I going with all of this? Why am I jumping around like this? Because that's how the fuck election 2014 was. Here we have people who will pass Prop 47. They will pass gun measures. They will pass these, you know, marijuana goddamn measures, right? They will do all of these lefty, supposedly stereotypical lefty goddamn things. But they fucking voted for the GOP when it came to the fucking seats. Why did they do that? Because they want the benefits of the progressive fucking package. And if you ask them, they are motherfucking progressives. But they want these niggas out of here. They want Holder out of office. They want Obama out of office. They want Susan Rice out of office. They want it the way it was. You understand? They wanted their conservatives. Look it up. Look up what the word means. They got, you know, I'm not talking about the literal textbook. I'm talking about look up what the term means in politics. Because, you know, you get people who want to fuck around and play with semantics and shit. And all they can do is give, all they're doing is giving me a fucking headache. You know, all of you brothers are doing is giving me a headache. You want to argue about all the fucking esoteric African history. Where does Freemasonry come from? No, it did not come from goddamn Egypt. Look up the Book of Thoth and how, and the Hermeticum on how the Greeks got that. And you'll see a fucking completely twisted, broken line of goddamn information that has you believing what they goddamn wrote. In the same time, you're talking about how evil white people are, but you read their text. You're pumping the fucking protocols of the Elders of Zion and shit. Instead of arguing for your fucking voting rights, because there were what, Luke, 40,000 goddamn applications gone missing. Of course, these people were mostly of color, gone missing. There were people turned away from the polls in states that didn't even have these fucking bullshit voter ID laws. And in Texas, black people had a hard time voting at all. Now, we saw this, like I said, Greg Palast, look it up, Voting While Black. The 2000 election, that I believe it was Fahrenheit 9/11, the Michael Moore film. And I'm really tired of people slamming Michael Moore because, you know, if he didn't make any money, he'd be a fucking fat slob, right? But he produces, you know, progressive films, but then he's a sellout because he's working with these bigger studios. Well, how the fuck else are you going to see the movie? He said it himself. I can't remember what, I think it was The Corporation. one of the more reasonable goddamn documentaries, mostly because it was actually a documentary, and it was made in Canada, or at least it was made by Canadians, so, you know, there was some common sense to it. I have to say that. You actually walk away with information from Canadian documentaries. I have to say that. You used to be able to say that about British documentaries. That you can't say that in the goddamn war. And in the United States, these are not documentaries. They're fucking docudramas. All they are is just historical reenactments. You know, the camera can't stay still. There's a whole lot of shifting, right? Transposing or juxtaposing. You can't actually focus on anything. But they're not saying any goddamn thing. You know, and I was pointing this out with somebody who had me actually sit down and watch about 6 or 8 hours. And it was more. There was more. I just couldn't do it anymore. Of this ancient aliens thing. And, you know, I remember reading. Yeah, I know I'm jumping around. Roll with me. I remember reading. And now I'm blanking on his goddamn name. The Swiss cat, Luke, who wrote Chariots of the Gods and... Yeah, whatever his name was, I had all three of them. I read them all. And he's, you know, since that time, he's discredited himself a lot of that, saying, hey, look, I used the information that was at the time, and I speculated from what I knew and thought at the time. As a European, he said that. I can't, Eric Von Däniken, thank, yeah, figure. Remember at some point. Eric Von Däniken, yeah, I mean, you know, not a bad cat. He's actually proven a couple of those things in terms of, you know, technological advances, I should say. Advances, at least for that time period. Well, why should I even say that time period? They cannot reproduce the pyramid structures in Giza, at least not the Great Pyramid. They don't even know how the fuck it was constructed. They don't know how any of that goddamn shit was done. I mean, there was some reasonable, again, European documentaries I've seen about classical Egyptian architecture, and just recently I saw something where it turns out there's a border around the entire Sphinx complex, because more than likely the Sphinx came first. Now, yeah, I know. You believe in that stuff, Angry Indian? Look, man, hey, I don't believe in any goddamn thing. If, you know, these guys can produce facts. A fact is a fact. It is what the fuck it is. The fact is, they don't know how the fuck they did this. There's a lot of speculation. I do not goddamn believe what I was told in college, that the Great Pyramid was built in 20 years with hammer and chisels. That's just bullshit. Especially once, you know, you start getting into the math of it. That's ridiculous. Now, I know a lot of Europeans do not want to give so much credence to this, especially in terms of, is provenance, because it's a lot older, at least, especially with the Sphinx. These items are a hell of a lot older than they actually are given credit for. So, you know, there's a real serious time frame fuck up with a lot of this. Mostly because Europeans don't really want to, at least the discipline of Egyptology, does not want to really deal with a lot of these questions. Because you then get into racism. And I've already heard this, you know, from people from Egypt who are Arab, who said, yeah, well, you know, nobody really wants to talk about a pre-existing, you know, black Egyptian, you know, past. It's something even we as Egyptians do not particularly like to talk about, you know, even though we consider ourselves African, you know, in the political sense, we don't consider ourselves sub-Saharan African, right? You know, they make that distinction. That on the continent of Africa, there's this line, you know, kind of like Haiti and the Dominican fucking Republic, right? You know, they make a goddamn arbitrary fucking line because of pure racism. So, you know, we're going to acknowledge, you know, these lighter people and fuck these others, even though the true Arab comes from Yemen. And where the fuck is Yemen? Now, see, that's much more of a reasonable motherfucking argument to make in terms of racism, in terms of how we are encouraged to look at each other and to process things. You know, if you process things as a person of color strictly through European history, it's not so much that you come up short. And see, and that's my problem with a lot of these brothers that want to, you know, get on with, you know, the math and overtalk every goddamn buddy about these esoteric disciplines. And you know, a lot of them are erudite, and you know, I listen to them, but the fuck thing, man, you know, it's like you guys can talk about that shit all fucking day long and can't relate any of that to any fucking thing. And then what's worse, many of them are dealing with so many motherfucking fallacies that even in, you know, as they like to put it, you know, which it is true, really. It is Europocentric, you know, dominated disciplines of Egyptology, of African history until very recently. Until very, very recently. I mean, a lot of these cats will read, you know, Cheikh Anta Diop. And I've studied Cheikh Anta Diop. And when I've tried to actually argue with them on points, they pick and choose and cherry pick from, you know, they go from Cheikh Anta Diop to the Bible. They don't turn around and say that the Bible isn't really credible, but they'll pick two or three lines that will support their argument, right? Even though we all know that the fucking Bible is not a goddamn history book. And they'll bring up some shit about the Sphinx, you know, the Great Sphinx being created by Moria, which is nutty. And what was the name of the cat I told you, Luke? Because we were talking about this when we were coming in. Gerald Massey, right? I mean, he was not an archaeologist, much less an Egyptologist. And he was totally discredited because he was writing fanciful books. You know, pretty much what Erich von Däniken has been accused of. The difference, though, with von Däniken, and the reason I'm bringing him up on this is, he was, you know, really attempting to be legitimate. You know, I believe him. You know, it, you know, like I said, when things were proven to him that, hey, you know, this isn't what you thought it was, he dropped it. Now, you know, he didn't go and write a book. Yeah, well, this is why I fucked up. You know, I don't know how many people are going to do that. But, you know, he definitely said, hey, you know, I was wrong about this. This turns out not, you know, not to be true. And I was totally off base about this. I mean, I've read a couple of pieces like that. But, you know, he was accused of, well, actually, he was accused of what? Well, he was convicted of something. I can't remember what it was. I don't even know if it was in relation to his books. But in any case, I mean, he made tons of money. Books, film, then VHS, right? Now DVDs. I suppose he still, you know, gets a point here and there because they still talk about his. I mean, that's just about how everybody got started in that whole ancient alien thing, right? And as a Native American, I wanted to, you know, find out, you know, yeah, the pyramids in Mexico, is there a connection? You know, like I wonder where the whole dragon thing came from in Mexico and in other, you know, cultures in South America and in some, not so much with the Dine, but a couple of small groups. You know, picked up this serpent thing. And, you know, yeah, I wanted to see if there was something to it. And, you know, the idea of star people and what have you, you know, anybody that has ever spoken to old people would tell you that they've seen this, that, and the other. And in a lot of Native nations in North America, and I understand in Central America, I can't speak for the South, but in the North, you know, the idea of star people, the idea of people come from another island, you know, someplace else over there in the stars, that's not uncommon. I mean, there's been a lot of play about the Dine and the Zuni about that, right? And, you know, and talking about Kachinas and do they represent, you know, aliens, kind of like the, I believe they're called Jiro, but I must be totally wrong, but whatever they are, they're these figurines in Japan that look like someone wearing an atmospheric suit. Okay, so it is what it is. Is it possible? Sure, it's possible. Does that mean that they came here and did every goddamn thing? Nah, see, I'm not willing to accept that. No indigenous person I know is willing to accept that. No archaeologist, and I'm talking about the honest ones, are willing to accept that. And when I say honest ones, I'm talking about not like that Piltdown Man crapola. You know, that the ones that the evangelical Christians who voted for me a love like to throw in our faces, even though we had nothing to do with that. The whole thing about Piltdown Man was not to discredit Christianity. The whole point of Piltdown Man was to goddamn, you know, impress the world that, you know, human life started in England, right? That the first human was a white man. And for those of you who don't know what that does, look up the Piltdown Man hoax, where basically they took a bunch of, you know, parts, some human, some from other primate species, threw it together, threw it into a recently or near a recently disterred work site. I want to say Surrey in the UK, but I don't remember. But in any case, it doesn't matter. In any case, it was a fraud. It was fake. It was bogus, the whole thing. But that didn't stop people from, you know, pushing it. Then it was finally discredited. But it was discrediting in terms of evolution, only in terms of the point that these guys are trying to make, that, you know, even though they were seeing at that time, nobody was really looking at Africa, they were looking at Java man, right? When you hear the Asiatic black man, it was from the news, from the information and scientific data that they had available to them at the time. Whether it was Master Farah Muhammad or whether it was, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon them both, right? Whichever it was, the idea of the Asiatic black man was the idea of Java man, the Indonesian, right? The oldest remains of a human primate found at that time. And that just completely, you know, as the fossil record was starting to, you know, build up, they started to realize, hey, hold up. You know, as Europeans, how the fuck do we explain this? We come from them? It's like when you hear Indo-European. I mean, what does that say? You know, it didn't start in Europe. It moved down. You know, where is Europe? Where are the borders of Europe, right? And it turns out Neanderthals and humans, they've been intermingling for quite some time, as people do, as humans do, right? So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of goddamn problems. So what does this have to do with the vote? All of this I just brought up, you know, UFOs, ancient aliens, Mia Love, you know, all of this, you know, seemingly unrelated data. What does all of this have to do with the vote? Well, what I'm talking about here, brothers and sisters, is that you got a lot of, you know, white hypocrites. And basically what Eric Holder said was true. The white man in the United States is a fucking coward. They, you know, they want everything. They want all the privileges. You know, they talk about Obamacare, but, you know, every conservative I know, you know, they always talk that shit. Well, you need to take care of your goddamn self. And as soon as they lose their job, when their health starts to fuck up from all that pork they've been eating, from all that steak, from all the fucking cigarettes they've been smoking and shit, all that goddamn whiskey they've been chugging. Now their liver, their heart, their lungs all fucked up. They can't walk. They need a fucking hover round and all that shit. And they can't goddamn pay for it. So what do they do? What do they do? They secretly go and they apply for goddamn welfare benefits. They apply for fucking Medicaid. They apply like Ayn Rand did. A fucking hypocrite. And I can talk shit about Ayn Rand because I was paying taxes at that goddamn time. When she was on motherfucking welfare, I was paying heavy motherfucking taxes. I was paying her motherfucking tax bill. So fuck all the libertarians, the objectivists, all of that bullshit want to tell me about Ayn Rand. Fucking Ayn Rand. She was a fucking hypocrite. And she couldn't even do it under her own fucking name. She went and she did that shit under her assumed name. So this is, you know, this is the conservatism that these idiots who went and voted, the ones who did goddamn vote, because it was mostly white men that voted these Republicans in. That's who voted them in. That's who voted them in. They want to take it back. You understand? They want to go back. The back to where they, you know, feel that they're back in fucking charge. The idea of having all these fucking black people up here in charge bothered the shit out of them. They didn't know what to do. They've been fucking crapping blood ever since. It's been a diarrhea of sangre all over the fucking streets because these guys can't deal with the fact that they're being represented by someone who looks like Ara Belafonte. You know, I mean, the fact that Obama is this, you know, I mean, this is the most attractive goddamn first family they've had since the Kennedys. And they have nothing good to say about her. They got nothing good to say about him. They insult the children all the motherfucking time. You know, there was a fried chicken fucking insult about Sister Michelle the other goddamn day. You know, somebody called in C-SPAN and called Obama a nigga the other day. You know, and then the GOP motherfuckers around me want to say that racism is really a program of the Democrats. Well, that's funny because I don't see any Democrats making these goddamn statements. I don't see any Democrats walking around with fucking t-shirts talking about, you know, guns, God, and white people and shit. You know, I don't see that with Democrats. I don't see Democrats packing when they go to motherfucking political rallies at a town hall talking about, well, I got a right to have it so I can fucking have it. I don't see any Democrats around me, and some of them are gun owners, you know, arguing for the right to walk around with a fucking, you know, a military grade weapon, an AK-47 or some other bullshit that you see in these fucking movies that they keep pushing in fucking mainstream media. No Democrat is arguing to be going around strapped like he's fucking going to a war zone in the fucking supermarket. in the Walmart or whatever. And then when something, you know, when somebody does pick up a fucking play weapon in a goddamn Walmart, like John Crawford, he gets blasted. Angela Williams, a woman who was there shopping with her children, has a heart attack because of the shock. She dies. The two cops are fucking not held responsible for not even finding out what the fucking situation is. They didn't even give him a chance to respond. And the motherfucking person who made the goddamn call, Ronald Ritchie, nothing happened to him. And nothing is gonna fucking, it seems, happen to him. But see, you motherfuckers don't want to talk about, the meter and whether or not it came from ancient, whatever the fuck and shit, somewhere deep in Africa, and white man stole your knowledge and what have you. Hey man, why don't you motherfuckers try to figure out why Ronald Ritchie is not being held accountable for admitting that he made a false 911 call? He admitted that he fucking lied. Look it up. It's all over the fucking internet. This son of a bitch admitted that he lied, that he was not threatening any motherfucking buddy, got two fucking people killed. One shot to death by the police and caused the other one to have a fatal fucking heart attack. Why is this son of a bitch not being fucking held accountable for it? Somebody talk to me, goddammit. Why is he not being held fucking accountable for it? Why has Darren Wilson been allowed to fucking ditch court, allowed to hide? And we don't even know who shot Rhonda Rip Myers. We don't know anything about what's going on with these cases. Even the Justice Department admits that there's obstruction up the fucking yin-yang with this, okay? But no, no one is going to fucking do anything about it. No one is going to fucking say anything about it. And you RGB motherfuckers who are standing on the street corner yelling at each other on whether more science has any more fucking legitimacy than the Nation of Islam, right? And then somebody who considers himself to be a student of Malcolm X, but then wants to talk about fuck all white people and shit. Nah, see, I'm sick of all of you motherfuckers. I'm sick of y'all. I'm sick of the motherfucking Democrats, right? I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of the fucking Democrats. And it's like, it's no point in being sick, and tired of the fucking GOP, because the GOP is going to be what the fuck they are, you know? The crooks and lying bastards that they fucking are. And when it comes to the black people in the GOP, these are the fucking suckers. These are the cats on the goddamn plantations that would have kicked your ass or put you in a fucking bad light with the sharecropper. I mean, not the sharecropper. You know, with the overseer or some shit, you know, so that you could be boss nigga. You think Jesse Lee Peterson would want to be out in the fucking field? Nah, he'd be the one telling, you know, the master who to whip. Alan West would be the best. He would be the number one goddamn, you know, boss nigga. That's the position that he wants. That's the position that he wants. Michael Steele was the human lawn jockey for the GOP. And what happened to him? Where is he now? And I will never let Alan Keyes forget about the day, or actually the evening, in Atlanta when he showed up for a GOP goddamn debate and they dragged his motherfucking ass out of there. They dragged that Uncle Tom son of a bitch right the fuck out of there while he was screaming about his constitutional right to be a motherfucking, you know, candidate, that he was a registered candidate in Georgia on the Republican ticket, and they dragged that motherfucker out on camera. I goddamn watched that shit. I watched that and laughed my fucking ass off. No, I do not feel sorry for Alan Keyes. I never felt sorry for that motherfucker. No. No. Same thing with Mia Love. Yeah, it's fucked up that people are sending her KKK shit, but this is what the fuck you get. You don't talk about racism. You don't stand against it. You just fucking do what you can to get your motherfucking bag of what? No, Luke, really, because all they're doing is fucking fighting over a goddamn handful of rice. In the end, they don't give a fuck about none of them. As soon as Colin Powell started talking anything reasonable, have you heard anything positive about Colin Powell from one goddamn Republican that you know? No. Right? You listener, have you heard anything good about Colin Powell? They were throwing him in your face. They wanted to wash our faces with Colin Powell. He was the good nigga, right? Just like they did, just like the Democrats did with Obama. And just like every Republican who voted for Obama. They wanted to wash our face. You know, this is my, racism's over card. It's over. I voted for a nigga. It's over.
There's no more struggle. White people have nothing to struggle. It's over.
We've done so much for you. It's over, right? See, that's the argument of Mia Love. That's the argument of Alan West. That's the argument of the Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson. And what's that outlaw shit over in, I think that crazy son of a bitch is in Harlem. Outlaw Ministries, whatever the fuck his name is. That crazy son of a bitch, whatever his name is. You know, I mean, I whatever his name is, he's one of those motherfuckers that was popping that imprecatory prayer shit. Man, fuck him, man. Yeah, he's black. Fuck him. Outlaw Ministries, whatever the fuck that clown's name is. He actually got motherfuckers to go to his church? Really? Fuck him, man. Yeah, he's got those goddamn videos out, right? Fuck him. All these black Republicans. Yeah. Tell them all I fucking said it, right? Fuck y'all, man. Fuck all of you. Fuck all of you. You know, none of you said a goddamn thing when Oscar Grant went down. None of you said a fucking thing when Sean Bell up in New York went down, right? None of you said a fucking word when Ayanna Jones got burned and goddamn shot in Chicago. You'll blame all the crime in Chicago on other black people, but you didn't say a fucking thing about what happened to him. And you didn't say a fucking thing about John Crawford. And there was that other brother who died in the, who suffocated in the back of the squad car on the goddamn dash cam. Suffocated in the back of a fucking police car. Nothing. Nothing. You got this other boy. His organs were missing and shit. Nothing. Another man. His car rolls. Nothing. You know, what black Republican is doing any goddamn thing? What white Republican is doing any goddamn thing? See, they all talk a bunch of shit. But see, here's the thing, though. Why are you not saying this about the Democrats? Well, the fucking Democrats, I already know, are going to talk shit and not do any goddamn thing. But like I said, they're not out here burning crosses on people's fucking lawns. They're not showing up at the goddamn Klan meetings. Yeah, the Democrats founded the fucking Klan, because I know that's going to fucking come. You're goddamn right. But how fucking long ago was that? And how many fucking Democrats vote fucking Klan members now? Kiss my ass with that shit. We all know that the fucking sides split. As soon as the Civil Goddamn Rights Bill came up, you know, being pushed by the fucking Civil Rights Movement, those radical supposed fucking Republicans, the ones that they keep talking about so much, right? They left. They went over to the Democratic Party. And those fucking George Wallace goddamn Democrats, they went over to the fucking Republican Party. The George Wallace Democrats went over to the fucking Republican Party. And anybody who knows any goddamn thing fucking knows that. But see, Republicans are good for fucking lying. They're good for taking the truth and twisting this shit. Like saying, oh, but this is a Christian country. Oh, fuck you. No, it wasn't. And you goddamn know it wasn't. George Washington was not a goddamn believer. He was chastised for not fucking going to church. His wife said that he laughed at the fucking Bible. Martha said he thought the Bible was a fucking joke. And don't talk about the purity of him any goddamn way, because we know how he died. He was coming back from the slave quarters in the middle of the fucking night, slipped and hit his fucking head, right? And never recovered. What was he doing out there? Playing chess? No. You know, you think Thomas Jefferson was the only one? There were burr heads all over these goddamn plantations. Are you fucking crazy? Do Republicans talk about that? Absolutely not. But the thing is, the pressure is on these motherfuckers, because they're the ones to say that they're so not racist. But they're the ones out here calling people niggas. If the Democrats are such biggers, how come they're not out here with nigger t-shirts and shit? I only see Republicans and Tea Party and Libertarians with that bullshit. I don't see black people being called monkey on progressive sites, liberal sites. But I see Sister Michelle being called a gorilla on fucking libertarian sites. I see the fucking first black president of the United States being called a nigger on fucking GOP Republican sites. I mean, you expect it from the fucking Nazis, right? The white supremacists and shit. But the paleo conservatives, oh, we're not racist, but, you know, Obama's a nigger. He's a baboon and shit that was born in Kenya, right? And how many of these jerks are still questioning his motherfucking place of birth? And Ollie Tate, who isn't even fucking from the goddamn United States, is making a motherfucking argument on who's American and who isn't. And this shit was allowed to go by fucking Republicans who are good for telling people who normally come from her country, hey, commie, go the fuck back home. So as I said, Republicans are, and, you know, just a bunch of fucking punks. You want to smoke weed, you want to have all the progressive goddamn privileges and shit, and you want health care, but you don't know how the fuck to go about it. And you want a white government back. Right? It is what the fuck it is. I just wish he actually had the fucking balls to come right out and say so. You know? And yeah, part of this shit is because the Democrats didn't have any goddamn chutzpah. That's why you motherfuckers lost. Alright? How many Democrats did not support their president? When they ask about, well, hey, you know, what about, you know, Obama's policies? Well, I'm a Clinton Democrat, which isn't being a Democrat at all, because Bill Clinton and his, you know, wife Hillary are not Democrats. They're party, you know, card holders. But what the fuck, man? That was the most convenient, I suppose, Republican government that has ever been here in terms of modern Republicanism. Bill Clinton was a fucking nightmare, right? NAFTA and GATT and the new crime bill. I know a whole lot of people don't fucking think about that one no goddamn more. Clinton is the one that put so many niggas in the joint. Three strikes, you're out, all that bullshit. Racial profiling, that came in with Bill Clinton. That came in with Bubba. And yeah, he was a Democrat, but like I said, nobody knows enough to fucking talk about that. See, if the GOP was really serious about their motherfucking hatred and wanted to point out the racism of the Democrats, they could have pointed out the new crime bill and how fucking Bill Clinton filled the prisons by saying that crack goddamn cocaine was way worse than walking around with powder cocaine. Who walks around with crack? Who walks around with powdered fucking cocaine? Somebody motherfucking talk to me. How did Freeway Ricky Ross become a motherfucking legend? I'm not talking about that fucking ex-cop put shit in somebody's drink. Supposed rapper. Ex, you know, whatever the fuck. No, not the fake Rick Ross. I'm talking about the real one. Alright? I'm talking about the real one. How much money was he making? Who, you know, who damaged the fucking hood? Where did he get that shit? What happened with Iran-Contra? And what happened in Iran because of this? So, no. Don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it. See, the GOP is full of shit. See, the Democrats have always been full of shit. They've never really lived up to their goddamn promises. But see, the fucking thing is the Republicans keep saying that they're the alternative to that, but they don't fucking live up to a fucking thing that they say that they stand for. Because if they were so fucking serious against racism, they would be out there against the goddamn Klan. They're not. Because they would totally fuck up their goddamn constituency if they did. That's why so many fucking Democrats punked out and were so busy trying to be like goddamn Republicans, they end up losing to the fucking Republicans. So shit that they should have fucking said and that shit that they should have been fighting for, they didn't. Because they were so afraid. Well, I'll never be able to win office if it seems that I'm like Obama, because they don't like Obama because he's a nigga, so I'm going to keep him at a distance. And yeah, and you did that, and what the fuck happened? Okay, you let the fucking bigots and your own motherfucking soft racism make this shit happen. So then we get black suckers like Mia Love to come around, who's going to fucking keep telling you that there's no racism in the GOP when she's motherfucking surrounded by this shit, to try to pretend that we're crazy. Now, see, this was done with Obama. I mean, do you really think Obama was up there because people believed in him? You think your dollars and cents got that motherfucker elected? No, it was Goldman Sachs that got him in. Because they needed a black face to push AFRICOM. They needed a black face to push all of the bullshit that's going on in Africa right now. All right? They're competing with China right now. So, no, they needed a way to get back in there. White faces cannot come in there and do it like that anymore. So they needed him. And it's not like, well, we trained him and we told him what to say. They didn't have to tell him. He believes in the system any goddamn way. He was not raised by black people. This is not a black man. He's not an American black man. He's an international black man. I'll give him that, you know. I'll say that because I understand what that means. And he understands what that means too. But he cannot turn around and say that he has had the same goddamn experiences that I have. And I'm not even trying to make this about me. I'm talking about just about any black man you can stop on the street. In this country. This is like growing up black in the UK. There's something there, man. You know, it's different.
growing up black in Canada. It has its own ifs, you know. I mean, come on, man. Come on, we're going to say that his being raised by white people did not influence him? You think he got into Harvard because he was smart, or he got into Harvard because he had the background that would get him in the fucking Harvard? You know, I mean, people don't really think about this, especially when they've never had to deal with this. If you've never had anyone who had a solid job, they got up every day and kept certain responsibilities and shit, you don't, it's hard for you to actually put together how you're supposed to do that. Now, obviously, some people are going to get it. A lot of people are not. So, you know, if your father understands business, if your mother understands business, you're likely to do well because you have some kind of training, some kind of grounding, the type of shit that you cannot teach in class. And so many of us grow up with nothing, with absolutely nothing, with the burden of history on our goddamn backs. And then we got someone like Maya Love, who's going to come around and say, oh, yeah, well, I'm Haitian, but, you know, you need to listen to me. No, fuck you. You had your chance the whole time you've been in politics to say something about fucking racism. You never said a fucking thing. All these goddamn black Republicans do the same shit. Well, we need more cops. That's all the fuck they can say. Well, we need more jobs, but they don't do shit to get you goddamn jobs, right? Native communities the same fucking way. The Native community is the same goddamn fucking way, man. You know, you'll see the tribal chairman or whatever. He's always having lunch with a white guy. If you see him and he's not with a white guy, it's a cousin. Right? The women who have the bigger jobs, they're all with white men. All those fellows who have the casino thing, you know, you think they're with another Native woman? No. And I'm not saying that people have to be whatever. That's not what the fuck I'm talking about. What I'm saying is, these folks are so removed for a lot of reasons. You know, sometimes, I mean, I know that's why, Tom, shit was just so fucking horrible where the fuck I was, man. And being mixed and shit, you know, white people were not punching me in the fucking face and shit all the time. So, yeah, I leaned that way, like a lot of times. There was a reason why we went that way. Some were raised in white neighborhoods. In my case, I ended up going to school with white people, right? Going to school in different places with white people and shit. They speak English, but they speak English a little differently. So, you know, it was confusing. And then, you know, being called blackie here, nigger here, right? Kaffa and this motherfucker, you know? So it's like, hey, I understand all this shit. And I'm not against anybody for saying, okay, well, you know, I'm black, but I have these conservative values. All right, that's one thing. But if you're going to fucking be a part of that shit, you're going to call yourself a Republican, you're going to say you're a Tory, you're going to say that you're a member of the fucking GOP and all that kind of shit, you're going to say you're a libertarian, who are the biggest fucking hypocrites? You know, they want all the privileges and don't want to pay any fucking taxes and don't want to do shit for anybody but their fucking selves. So, you know, scratch them. But, you know, if you're going to fucking be down with all that shit, they call them to fuck on things when these things happen. Don't tell me that I'm supposed to just fucking brush it aside. Or that's that particular goddamn individual. I don't want to hear that shit, man. You got a Nazi reenactor, fucking Republican Party in Ohio. You know, I don't want to hear this. You know, none of you come up and say a goddamn thing about anything, but you want to argue about Benghazi, which has already been fucking done with, all right? It's already been fucking discredited. But you're going to continue to rail on that because you got nothing to fuck else. And talk about how, you know, fucked up in, what was it, Ben Stein, that racist son of a bitch? You know, fuck that little, what the fuck is Ben Stein's problem? If he doesn't want to live, you know, I mean, if he doesn't like the United States, then he should fucking leave. And as an Indian, I can fucking say that. You know, the most, you know, Obama, the most racist president in American history, to who, white people? And to who? Jews? You know, who are you talking about? Racist to who? He's been, but I mean, if you want to talk about racist to any goddamn buddy, he's been kicking the black community in the ass ever since he got into office. He didn't tell the Spanish-speaking community here to get a pair of fucking slippers and stop being lazy. He said that shit to us twice. The supposed race speech of 2008, he blamed every fucking black activist in the country for the anger of white people. So what are white people complaining about? What is the GOP fucking complaining about? Yeah, I mean, I think that you guys just like to hear yourselves fucking talk. Because you're so fucking scared, you know? Why don't you just go back where the fuck you belong? You know, if you really feel that shit here in the United States is that fucked up, go the fuck back to Europe. There's not a fucking thing stopping you. There's nothing stopping you. But the thing is, they don't fucking want you over there. And if I have to share air with you, at least be fucking honest about your goddamn racism instead of fucking acting like I'm the one with the fucking problem. See, you know, we don't have time for games, all right? Tricks are for kids. And Eric Holder was right. You're a bunch of fucking goddamn cowards. And all you can do is scream like these goddamn gamers and shit and act like fucking fools. Because you got nothing to fuck else. You got nothing to fuck else. And if you had any goddamn balls, join the fucking Klan. You know, you might as well, because you're supporting what the fuck they're doing anyway. With your bullshit. You know, I don't have time for, you know, I mean, you know, bigots are fucking annoying as it is. Racists, you know, pure, flat-out racists, you know, white supremacists and shit, black supremacists, all of you are fucking dumb. You know, the couple of Chinese supremacists I've known, I mean, you know, you're a bunch of fucking idiots. But the thing about it is, they don't claim to be non-racist. The GOP does. So live your fucking lyrics, you fucking hypocrites. Live your fucking lyrics. And before you fucking get a crayon and write me a goddamn nasty fucking letter, spell check it. This is the Angry Indian. Stay tuned.
I'd like to start this week with a request, and this one goes out to the followers of the three Abrahamic religions, to the Muslims, Christians, and Jews. It's just a little thing, really, but do you think that when you've finished smashing up the world and blowing each other to bits and demanding special privileges while you do it, do you think maybe the rest of us could sort of have our planet back? I wouldn't ask, but the thing is, I'm starting to think there must be something written in the special books each of you so enjoy referring to that tells you it's all right to behave like precious, petulant, pugnacious pricks. Forgive the alliteration, but your persistent power-mad punch-ups are pissing me off. It's mainly the extremists, obviously, but not exclusively. It's a lot of mainstreamers as well. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about, okay? Muslims. Listen up, my bearded and veily friends. Calm down, okay? Stop blowing stuff up. Not everything that's said about you is an attack on the Prophet Muhammad and Allah that needs to end in the infidel being destroyed. Have a cup of tea, put on a Cat Stevens record, sit down and chill out. I mean, seriously, what's wrong with a strongly worded letter to the Times? Christians, you and your churches don't get to be millionaires while other people have nothing at all. They're your bloody rules. Either stick to them or abandon the faith. And stop persecuting and killing people you judge to be immoral. Oh, and stop pretending you're celibate as a cover-up for being a gay or a nonce. Right, that's two ticked off. Jews! I know you're God's chosen people and the rest of us are just whatever. But when Israel behaves like a violent, psychopathic bully and someone mentions it, that doesn't make them anti-Semitic. And for the record, your troubled history is not a license to act with impunity now. So, when the letters come, and I'm guessing they will, I can guarantee that each one of those faiths will be utterly convinced that I've singled them out for special criticism.
Why did it have to be us? Islam is a peaceful faith.
I don't see what's wrong with being Christian. We're a peaceful, loving faith.
How dare you, after all we've been through? We Jews know how terrible violence can be.
You see, all of them will be convinced that they're the ones being picked on. The Abrahamic faiths are like Scousers. They're always convinced they're ever harder than everyone else. Right, and why is it that all of these faiths claim to be peaceful, when even the most fleeting glance at a history of warfare will tell you otherwise? The relationship between religion and warfare is very similar to the relationship between ant and deck. You could have one without the other, but I'm not sure anyone would see the point. I wouldn't actually like it, but it would at least be refreshing to hear one of them come out and say,
"Oh, our faith's violent as you like. We love a scrap, that's what we do. Honestly, our special book says fight, fight, kill, maim, fight, smash, destroy, fight, murder, kill, and fight. That's why I signed up, to be honest. I'm a bit naughty, know what I mean?"
But no, all of them claim to be peaceful religions. Yeah, peaceful right up to the point where someone takes something they think is theirs or says the wrong thing or looks at them funny, then it's fighty, smashy, kicky, punchy all the way. I know this will upset a lot of people, and frankly, I don't care. I'm getting so sick of religious people screwing it up for the rest of us. Please don't kill us. Seriously. As far as I'm concerned, this is the only chance we get. When we die, it's all over. There's no virgins and pearly gates waiting for us. No big beardy man saying...
Right, so how do you think that went then? Mixed? Killed a lot of people in my name, I see. Yeah, not really what I had in mind, actually. Tell you what, have another go as a worm.
While we're at it, I'm sick of religious people forcing their children to define themselves by their parents' faith. A four-year-old is no more a Christian than he is a member of the Postal Workers' Union.
We want a fair working wage, decent working conditions, and time allotted to see the new Transformers film.
To inform you that the Sodomites led a protest against our church this past Sunday. Several members of the Pennsylvania Oath Keepers came up. You know, the fellows that was with us out there in Gettysburg. Well, we had a special meeting this Sunday here at the church, and they came up and we were meeting, and someone informed me that the Sodomites were outside of our church protesting. So we went out and took a look, and they were, and they had a big bucket of Starbucks coffee and all kind of other Starbucks paraphernalia with them. And they were all shouting, "Stop the hate now." They said that this church is a hate church and that I'm a hate preacher. But you remember that last week we appeared in several major online news services, Huffington Post being a major one, The Inquisitor being another. What else? Gay Star News, I think, was one. And just several papers wrote articles about us because we had stated that Starbucks is ground zero for Ebola. And we pointed up how these homosexual sodomite persons, such as Dr. Craig Spencer, who lives right here in the Harlem area, who is a sodomite, that they frequent, that Starbucks is a place where these type frequent and a lot of body fluids are exchanged there, and Ebola. But the thing that I was not aware of is that there had been some information that had been released, and the Inquisitor News online news service carried this as a major story the week before, that what Starbucks was doing is that they were taking specimens of male semen and they were putting it in the blends of their latte. Now, this is the absolute truth. It's right there. You can see it right there in Inquisitor Online Services. It was a big article about an investigation into Starbucks using male semen and putting it into the blends of coffees that they sell. I mean, can you imagine it? And I believe that they were doing that. You know, Coca-Cola got started at, 100 years ago by using cocaine. They were actually using cocaine. And they stayed off the federal government and the use of cocaine, because during the time they were used, there was no FDA, there was no Federal Drug Administration, there was no really, drugs that were controlled substance drugs. And so they used it for a large number of years, people drinking Coca-Cola and getting high on the farm. I mean, you could drink a Coca-Cola at night and wouldn't need any Johnny Walker. You didn't need any gin. You drink gin because it ain't no sin, no vodka either. All you need was Coca-Cola. And people are drinking Coca-Cola you won't believe. But the deal is this. The deal is that Starbucks has been, what's the word I'm looking for? Legally accused of, this is the word, legally accused of using male semen in their lattes. So when you drink Starbucks coffee, it's right there, see it right there. I'm not making this up. Inquisitor is a reputable online service, and they wrote 3 pages on this event. And the FDA is investigating. A lot of other people are investigating as well. So my question is, where are they getting all this semen from? You know, I mean, You ever go to the doctor and he tells you that? Well, I don't want to go there. But you understand what they tell you and you bring back the cup. Well, my suspicion is that they're getting this semen from sodomites. That's what my suspicion is. And somebody had discovered that semen, like cord blood, you know what cord blood is? But I don't have time to tell you if you know what cord blood is. My suspicion is that semen, like cord blood, has the opportunity, and it has millions and millions of little zygotes in it, and it flavors up the coffee. And it makes you think you're having a good time drinking that cup of latte with the semen in it. This is what Inquisitor, I'm not making this up. That's why Starbucks jumped all over me when I said that Ebola, that Starbucks was ground zero for Ebola. Now I know why I don't go to Starbucks. But now I know why all these other, you know, untoward types hang around in Starbucks. This investigation has not been closed as of yet. Going back to the original story. So they came and they protested outside of our church this past weekend. Yeah, they did. And so I suppose that they'll be back again and again and again. But I want to serve notice on everybody that will listen. I want to tell you that in not too many days, there will not be a public sodomite in Harlem. From 96th Street to 155th Street, river to river, there will not be a public sodomite. I'm going to tell you that. Now, you know, I've said a lot of things over the years. Many of them you questioned. A number of them you kind of got in the groove of. Others you didn't believe. But all of them have come true. I want to tell you that there will not be a public sodomite in Harlem in not too many days. And Starbucks will close. Starbucks will be found to be perverting its customers and perverting human sexuality as if drinking Starbucks is some sort of a sacrificial ritual bath where they kill the innocent babies and drink their blood in some of these meetings that are had by these fraternal or sorority groups. Starbucks has for years been using sexual fluids to prosper their businesses, and the truth is now coming out. According to Inquisitor magazine, New York Times will not write about it, and others who have a sodomite propensity will not lift up the story. But the truth is going to come out. Me, I'm James David Manning, everybody. I'm the Lord's servant.
And Grande gave sermons that went something like this. You know, if Jesus ever tried to come to El Salvador, he'd have a tough time. I don't think he'd make it very far across the border. They'd lock him up. And as for the Bible, the only thing they'd let in are the two covers, because everything in between would be viewed as subversive, etc., etc. So this friend of Romero's, they had different views, but...
Hey, old bean, and you too, baby. This is Uncle Tom, Commander-in-Chief of your Black Freedom Fighters in North America, bringing you the latest news from your Black Underground. Hang on, brothers and sisters. Remember, brothers, liberation is near. Even if they do count our votes several times every 4 years.
Internet radio for smarter, the original. This is Cindy Sheehan. George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others launched a war that took my son's life. Strong evidence suggests that in promoting the war, they lied to Congress and the American people, and that in conducting the war, they have targeted civilians, hospitals, and journalists, used illegal weapons, imprisoned without charge, tortured and spied on Americans without court approval. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to begin impeachment proceedings against George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
General Clapper, would you agree on saying that having access to public information is not an act of espionage?
Yes.
Would you, with your experience in intelligence matters, describe Cuba as a military threat for the United States?
Absolutely not. Cuba does not represent a threat.
Did you find any evidence indicating that Geraldo Hernandez was trying to obtain secret information?
No, not that I recognized.
Did you, General Clapper, come across any secret national defense information that was transmitted to Cuba by Geraldo Hernandez or the other defendants?
Not that I remember, no.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm Danny Glover, activist and actor. We just did a scene from the trial of the Cuban Five, who are doing long sentences for fighting terrorism. I hope that you would join us in this effort to support them and free them. It is a very just cause.
I'm not General Clapper. My name's Peter Coyote. I'm an actor and a politically engaged citizen. I hope you'll take a few minutes to learn something about the case of the Cuban Five. It's a grievous injustice and a stain on our national honor.
Hi, I'm Buffy St. Marie. We have overcome many obstacles in our history as Aboriginal people. We've survived. Today, we must work together, become leaders in the fight to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in our communities. We have to think about the seven generations ahead of us. It's a matter of survival.
Howdy, kids. This is Monk Turner, galactic defender of the concept album. When I'm not saving our universe from the evil sludge known as the hit single, I'm listening to Creative Commons licensed podcasts.
I come from America, and I know that often America seems like kind of a, I don't know, redneck, dickhead, peckerwood, bohunk, hee-haw, gun-toting, psycho-Christian, anti-choice, homophobic, truck-driving, dog-in-the-back, gimme-cap-wearing, you know, the jury's still out on evolution, giant belt buckle with your name on it that you wear upside down so you can go, oh shit, that's my name! Kind of place. The reason America appears this way is clearly England's fault. Now, convoluted logic, but follow along and you'll find rich rewards. Once upon a time, the English sent people all over the world. To this country, you got the Scottish. In our country, we got the Pilgrims. And they still celebrate Thanksgiving in England, by the way. It's called Fuck Off, Puritan. Day. Because we're told a lot of lies growing up in America about American history. And the chiefest lie we're taught is about Thanksgiving. And it's always the same, ever since you're little. The Pilgrims left England to escape religionist persecution and to sneak religionist freedom into the new world. And even when you're a child, you're like, excuse me, teacher, bullshit? Bullshit. You're just saying that, right? Because it sounds better than the truth. La la la, la 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 la. It sounds better and it tastes better, so we'll all pretend it really happened. There were no women or minorities, just a bunch of white guys wearing wigs. My feeling is, The pilgrims were asked to leave England. England was never funner than when the pilgrims split. The English got a little tired of these dour, right-wing, black-clad, conservative, gun-toting, Bible-thumping psycho-Christians running around, scaring everyone, confusing people by wearing buckles on their heads. Is that tight enough for you, Cotton? Yea, verily. Me canst but hardly think. Till finally someone went, I've got an idea. Why don't you little religious weirdos get in a leaky, rickety little boat and get the fuck off the island, huh? Sail around the world till you hit the new world. When you get there, commit genocide on the indigenous people. Have a groovy time. Knock yourselves out. Have a witch trial. Let us know how that works out for you. We'll be back in England having the Renaissance in case anyone needs us. They send them over with guns and Bibles and no farming implements. And then I have to hear this every time I go to England. Well, all Americans are fat and stupid. Really? Well, thanks for sending over the best and brightest to start the party, huh? Maybe we could send a few gun-toting Texas militia psychopaths back your way. There's a lot of talk about Jesus in my country and how he's an American. And I have a hard time believing that if Jesus came back, he'd even get entry into the Washington, D.C. area. A little short, hunky Jewish guy with a beard and sandals and a robe, that ain't going to make it. You know what I mean? He's going to be turned out. No service, baby. Because, you know, if you appointed Jesus to the Supreme Court, I don't know how he'd get through the hearing process. Because it is rigorous in front of the Senate. Now, Mr. Christ, is it? You could have shown a little respect and worn a blazer or a sport coat here today. Now, is it not true, Mr. Christ, that you spent a significant amount of time in the desert with a group of 12 other men? Oh, I see, they were your disciples, is that so? Are you running some sort of gay marriage cult, Mr. Christ? Is that some sort of gay slang for river rafting or something? Oh, you wouldn't characterize it as a cult, or would you not? Well, did you not take one Simon Peter and tell him you would make him a fisher of men? Oh, of their souls, I would warn the nominee that he is walking on very thin water right now.
Do, 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 do. Business, business everywhere. Runs a country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare. All these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face. Profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse before this place really bursts. Business, business everywhere. Babies use the word before they learn to walk the stairs. Anybody here say World Trade Organization? Perpetuating, exploiting peoples, tribes, and nations. Let's see if we can see how far back bad business started. Long before the pharaohs and the day the sea was parted. When Moses led the slaves through the waves to be saved. But tell me, did things really change? Look around the world, the top to down, it's getting awful strange. Bad business getting poor people in a tizziness. Makes them want to blow up Babylon so high it's dizziness. Business at the center of the WTO. World Trade, what O-W-T-C Center? You
know, a disaster. Business making pollution grow faster. Made a crook of the doctor and the pastor. Took the president and made of him a bastard. And sells to you the rip-off rapper on your ghetto blaster. Who wants money first and justice second? I'm wrecking this. Throw the merchants out the church, they're begging for a king-size downfall. Beggars in the street because of y'all. Let it be known that dirty business made the world trade fall. Not terrorism, but businessism itself. Like the media putting war flicks on your shelf. A lot of wealth in your daily news and TV too. Papers, capers, congressmen are just escapers, it's true. Yeah, while the refugees go do 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 do. Business, business everywhere, runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare, all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced, time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth, determined its godly worth. Time to put it in the hearse, before this place really bursts. Maybe I can put this differently. The new world order's gonna get hurt just by being me. Cause I ain't seen nothing but hype, no controversy. And so it looks like this time it might have to be me. So, yeah, confidentially, it's my personal business how the rock star gets fame. Exploiting poor folks to get rich, so tell me who's to blame. Shame on you, you poser, wake up, party's over. Kill the Land Rover, army buggy, sold the world over. Yeah, the world is soon to be over. The way this here deal's going down, that's why it's my personal business how the Bush and Cheney families been doing business with the Hussein Laden families, and getting fights when things don't go quite right, you see, and whip up wars when they need profits for the military. The chickens already came home to roost, the cat is out the bag with tea shopping on the truth. But even if the dirty businessmen get their wars, the truth been told and will be known and grown forevermore. So if anybody doubts, look how Nero's remembered. Every lie finally leads to time and God surrenders. Yeah, while the refugees go do 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 do. Business, business everywhere, runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare, all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced, time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth, determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse, before this whole wide world bursts.
Is to delude people with imagery and tales of a football player, a sexy actress who drives to the moon in a car or something like that. But it's certainly not to inform people. In fact, it's to keep people uninformed. The goal of advertising is to create uninformed consumers who will make irrational choices. Those of you who suffer through an economics course know that markets are supposed to be based on informed consumers making rational choices. But industry spends hundreds of millions of dollars a year to undermine markets and to ensure that you get uninformed consumers making irrational choices. And when they turn to selling a candidate, they do the same thing. They want uninformed consumers, uninformed voters, to make irrational choices based on the success of illusion, slander, invective, body language, or whatever else is supposed to be significant. So you undermine democracy pretty much the same way you undermine markets. That's the nature of an election when it's run by the business world, and you'd expect it to be like that. There should be no surprise there. And it should also turn out that the elected candidate doesn't have any debts. So you can follow, Brand Obama can be whatever they decide it to be, not what the population decides that it should be, as in the South, let's say. I might say on the side that this may be an actual instance of the familiar and usually vacuous slogan about clash of civilizations. Maybe there really is one, but not the kind that is usually touted. So let's go back to the evidence that we have, rhetoric and actions. Rhetoric, we know. Now, what are the actions? Well, so far, the major actions are selection of, in fact, the only actions are selection of personnel for the to implement Brand Obama. The first choice was the vice president, Joe Biden, one of the strongest supporters of the war in Iraq in the Senate. Long-time Washington insider, you know, rarely deviates from the party vote. And the cases where he does deviate are not very uplifting. So he did break from the party in voting for a Senate resolution that prevented people from getting rid of their debts by individuals, that is, from getting rid of their debts by going into bankruptcy. It's a blow against poor people who are caught in this immense debt that's a large part of the basis for the economy these days. But usually he's a kind of straight party liner, votes with the Democrats on the sort of ultra-nationalist side. The choice of Biden was a must have been a conscious attempt to show contempt for the base of people who were voting for Obama and were organizing for him as an anti-war candidate. Well, the first post-election appointment was for chief of staff, which is a crucial appointment, determines a large part of the president's agenda. That was Rahm Emanuel, one of the strongest supporters of the war in Iraq in the House. In fact, he was the only member of the Illinois delegation who voted for Bush's effective declaration of war. And again, a longtime Washington insider. Also one of the leading recipients in Congress of funding from the financial institutions and hedge funds and so on. He himself was an investment banker. That's his background. So that's the chief of staff. The next group of appointments were the main problem that the primary issue that the government's going to have to face is what to do about the financial crisis. The Obama's choices to more or less run this were Robert Rubin and Larry Summers from the Clinton Secretaries of Treasury under Clinton. They are among the people who are substantially responsible for the crisis. Actually, one leading economist, one of the few economists who's been right all along in predicting what's happening, Dean Baker, pointed out that selecting them is like selecting Osama bin Laden to run the war on terror. I'll finish. This saves me the problem of talking about what's coming next. I'll just finish with the elections. Let me make one final comment on this. There was a meeting on November 7th, I think, of a group of a couple of dozen advisors to deal with the financial crisis. Their careers records were reviewed in the business press. Bloomberg News had an article reviewing their records and concluded that most of these people shouldn't be giving advice about the economy. They should be getting subpoenas because they were, most of them were involved in, were involved in one or another form of financial fraud. That includes Rahm Emanuel, for example. He says, what reason is there to think that the people who brought this crisis about are somehow going to fix it? Well, that's a good indication of what's likely to come next, at least if we look at actions. We could, but I won't, you can bring this up, ask what we expect to see in particular cases. And there's evidence about that from statements from Obama's website. I'll mention just one thing about Obama's website, which gives an indication of what's happening. One of the major problems coming is Afghanistan and Pakistan. That's pretty serious. Take a look at Obama's website under issues, foreign policy issues. The names don't even appear. I mean, we're supposed to be ignorant and meddlesome outsiders. We're not supposed to know what Brand Obama is. So you can't find out that way. The statements that you hear are pretty hawkish. And it doesn't change much as you go through the list, but I'll wrap up here. Yeah. So it's up to you to continue.
Thank you,
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Inform yourself about Plan B emergency contraception. Information can be the best protection, especially dealing with asexual assault or unprotected sex. If you are 17 or older, you do not need a prescription to receive Plan B. All Indian Health Service facilities should carry Plan B, but most don't. This is a violation of your reproductive rights. Call your local Indian Health Service unit and ask for Plan B. It is our right as Native women to receive Plan B. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Vibe, the host and producer of the Dr. Vibe Show at thedrvibeshow.com. At our show, we do conversations and provide information for black men and those who love them. So come check us out. Also at iTunes, and also selective episodes are featured at the Good Men Project, one of the most viewed websites in the world for men. So find out about black men and those who love them at the Dr. Vibe Show.
This is Vagabond, producer, writer, and director, Machetero. You're listening to The Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
I'm in a rogue state, honey, getting unpredictable and strange. Just a rogue state itching to test my Haridan bardic range. R's for the radical ecologist on the fringe. O is the opportunity to make first war powers cringe. G is the genius hacker under alien skin. You better watch out, every female activist akin. I'm in a rogue state, Papa Ashcroft. Don't tell me what to do. Your rules aren't my rules, 'cause I'm the lady of misrule. Wild card, they call me. Imperious, sultry, dark. Loose cannon on the gunwale. This literary cannon's got a subversive quark. National Missile Defense System got nothing on me. I can pierce through the Genome Project with a cyborg's vitality. Gated communities tremble. I'm a coming through the door. Rogue states, a state won't humble. Call her witch. Call her whore.
I'm in a rogue state. Don't tell me what to do. Your rules aren't my rules, 'cause I'm the lady of misrule. Rogue state.
You have been listening to Angrindian Radio, angrindianradio.blogspot.com.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network. And I'm Joe Toscano. Yes, and I'm hosting today's program. What else is new? Well, I'm distraught. I am distraught. Radical has become a dirty word. You got all these people being radicalized to become Muslim fundamentalists. Well, I'd just like to remind you the word radical means to use extreme measures to promote reform. And reform is about making things better, not worse. So those people aren't radicals, all right? So let's reclaim the word radical. Anarchists, well, you know about the word anarchists. Anarchists are not bomb throwers. Anarchists are people who believe in a society without rulers, not without rules. And then we have direct action. You know, one of the three pillars of anarchist activity. Taken over by the Abbott government. Direct action climate change policy. I'm feeling sick. I think I'll just go home. Look, all right. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, anarchist society is a voluntary, non-hierarchical society based on the creation of political and social structures which are based on equal decision-making power, which give all people equal access to society's wealth. And why? How do you create a society without rulers? You need to be able to harvest the collective wisdom, and direct democratic processes is one way, not parliamentary democracy or representative government. And how do you ensure that people don't get more than their just share? Well, you hold wealth in common, so it belongs to all of us. Simple concepts, anarchism is for simple people. So if you're a simple person, keep listening to the Anarchist World This Week. If you want glory, you want to become a great leader, a CEO of a multinational corporation, listen, you may learn something on why you shouldn't waste your time trying to do that. Now, let's start off with climate change. Silly little people in the United Nations, the Climate Change Authority, they've suggested very strongly that it's been 800,000 years. That's right. 800,000 years, longer than Homo sapiens have been on the planet, not Neanderthals, but Homo sapiens have been on the planet, that things have never been so bad for greenhouse emissions. and they have suggested we phase out coal. That's right, before the end of the century, which is a long way away, which is 86 years away. You won't be here, but I'll be here, or my head will be here in some chloroform somewhere. But who knows what will happen in 86 years. But isn't that extraordinary? Here we live in one of the most interesting places on the planet. 23 million people, or 22.5 million people, on a continent in the midst of a resources boom. And we can't even make the effort to tackle or even acknowledge that climate change exists. What was the last election about? Getting rid of the carbon tax. And why do we get rid of the carbon tax? Because we don't believe in climate change. That's a furphy. And if you're wondering what a furphy is, look it up. If you are PHY and all you World War One devotees should know all about furphy. So here we are. Climate change doesn't exist. And then what I really love, and I'd like to make some money because there's $2.5 billion at stake out there, and there will be an auction for it in the very near future, and all you've got to do is put in a tender. Now, they're going to pay you not to pollute. So I suggest that if you take medication not to pass methane, that you could actually claim money in the direct action climate change policy. I mean, it's that ludicrous. You pay people not to pollute. It reminds me of that old story, you know, you're sitting at home and some bloke knocks on the door and he's got, you know, he's got tattoos on his tattoos and he's got muscles on his forehead and he says, "Nice home you have here, Joe. It'd be a pity if something happened. Would you like to buy some insurance?" It's the same concept. It's about blackmail. Here we have transnational corporations with tons and tons of money giving more money if they say they won't pollute. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? So I'm sure some entrepreneur, some anarchist or radical entrepreneur out there will work out some type of scheme by which you to tap into that $2.5 billion. Because you could say, well, I'm not going to light any more fires. That releases CO2. So, or you could say, I'm not going to fart as much. This is how ludicrous it is. Totally ludicrous. While the world faces the greatest challenge we has faced since the human race, you know, appeared on this speck in the galaxy, and all we can do in Australia is ban wind farms, remove tariffs to promote solar energy. Of all the places on the planet, you would think that Australia could be self-sufficient in energy. Do you know that in Germany, they're phasing out their nuclear power industry and rely on renewables? And if you've been to Germany, it can be a cold place in winter. While here, we banned wind farms. We destroy the solar panel industry, and all you need to do is put some solar panels in the bloody house, or your flat, or get your landlord to do it. And hey presto, energy, free energy from the sun. And we've got these clowns in federal parliament and their puppet masters in the Murdoch media telling us that the greatest challenge faced by Australians since Federation was the imposition of a carbon tax. And we fell for it, hook, line and sinker. How extraordinary. So, you know, if like me, you don't believe all these scientists and you don't believe in evolution and you believe that the Earth was created in 7 days and you believe that little green men live under the bed. And you believe, what else can we believe? Oh, I won't go into those conspiracy theories that everybody seems to believe. They think they're fact. But the reality is, come on. Really? This is the biggest conspiracy theory. Forget about all those people jumping up and down about 9/11. In comparison to what they're claiming, what Abbott is claiming and his government is claiming, that climate change doesn't exist, and the best way, if it does exist, to actually tackle it is to pay polluters with taxpayers' money. Well, what can I say? Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australian Community Radio Network. What can I say? I mean, it'd be funny if it wasn't so serious. But that's the type of Australia we live in today. Now, let's move on. Now, there's a few things happening this week and next week. Now, don't forget those hardy souls who are making the pilgrimage to Murchison in Victoria, which is about 130, 140 kilometres north of Melbourne, about 60 k south of Shepparton. Now, on Sunday, the 9th of November, a dozen or so hardy anarchists and radicals will be turning up at a little ceremony which is held at a cemetery or an ossuary at Murchison. And what's all this about? Well, in 1942, yes, 1942, Francesco Fantin, an anarchist who had come to Australia in 1924, yes, a refugee, a bloody refo from Mussolini's fascists, and who attempted over a number of years with fellow Italian refugees to open Australians' eyes to the fact of the impending calamity of World War II and the real nature of fascism and Nazism. Well, poor old Francesco Fantin was arrested as an enemy alien because, well, he had an Italian surname, didn't he, Fantin? And he ended up at Camp Loveday in South Australia, and guess where they put him? That's right, in the middle of 400 card-carrying Italian fascists who'd been agitating Australia for Mussolini. All right? So what do you think happened to Fantin? In classical fascist manner, while he was bending down, this is after he'd been beaten a few dozen times while in the few months he was there, while he was bending down to get a drink from a tap, a hero, a fascist Italian hero, a follower of Mussolini, came up and smashed him across the head with a 4B2. And poor old Francesco, who was about 60 k's and about 5'4", died after about two agonising hours. Now, we thought that his bones... Now, Francesco had no... He didn't have a wife in Australia. He was divorced from his wife in Italy, who he had no contact with. He had no children. We thought that his bones had been disinterred and chucked away. Imagine our surprise 18 months ago when we discovered that Francesco Fantin's bones are interned in an ossuary in Murchison. Because what happened after the end of World War II, about 10 years after the end of World War II, the bodies of Italian prisoners of war, and there were a number of prisoners of war, Italian prisoner of war who came to Australia, who were interned in Australia, and Italians who'd been interned in Australia who died, their bodies were disinterred from around the country and taken to this mortuary, this ossuary in Murchison by the Italian community so they could pay their respects to their dead. And on the Sunday closest to Armistice Day, the Italian community has an Armistice Day ceremony at Murchison. And we attended last year, which caused a little bit of consternation, but as we've had a little chat with the Italian consul, I don't think we'll cause such a consternation this year. So what we do is we sit around for about 2 hours waiting for the Catholic Mass to finish and all the Italian military attachés to give their spiel. And then at the end of that, when they kind of pack up their bags, we put up our Francesco Fantin banner and pay our respects to Francesco. We had over a dozen people last year, which was good. I don't know if we'll get that many this year. So we encourage you to join us. Willoughby Street, Murchison. You can't miss the Murchison Ossuary. It's a big Swiss-like building in the Australian countryside. Quite extraordinary, really. So 10 a.m., and after that, we all troop down to the riverbank. You know, all the relatives and friends of all those who are buried there, and we set up our own little picnic tables and get stuck into some food. So if you're coming along, bring some food and drinks, all right? There aren't many places in Murchison to buy stuff, especially on a Sunday. So bring some food and drinks if you're coming. So 10 o'clock, Sunday the 9th of November. And if you can't make it this year, put it in your calendar, activist calendar for next year. It's a great day. It's a good day to create bonds between activists. And it's one way of us remembering Francesco Fantin. He has his own little box there. His bones are there. His name's on it. And unlike 90% of the people who are buried there, he's not an Italian serviceman. He's just a poor internee who found himself in the wrong place at the wrong time. Because it was interesting, because a number of other Italian anarchists were not interned, but he actually was interned. Maybe the fact that he came from North Queensland may have something to do with it. But there is a connection with Melbourne because he worked for many years in the woolen mills in Geelong, an industry which obviously no longer exists. Now, if you can't make it to Murchison, we have something happening on Armistice Day. Yes, and some people are a bit concerned. Well, don't be concerned. You may have seen over the last few months, since the 5th of August, the 100th anniversary of the declaration of World War I, the state pull out all stops to honour the memory of World War I. Unfortunately, only half the story's been told. Because you would think that Australians were shoulder to shoulder fighting for God, King and country during the World War I. Well, if you look at the historical accounts, and even a cursory examination of the historical accounts will show you that Australia was a divided nation during World War I. And actually, the people who were against the war and against conscription were on the winning side. Because the government, under a lot of pressure, fearing a general strike, called a referendum on the 28th of October 1916 in order to introduce conscription. And guess what? A motley alliance of the industrial workers of the world and a radical organisation which was banned under the War Precautions Act, its assets seized, segments of the Roman Catholic Church, segments of the trade union movement and the women's movement conducted a campaign which led to the defeat of the conscription referendum on the 28th of October 1916 and the 20th of December 1917. And as you know, over 60,000 young Australian men died on the European killing fields for the glory of God, kin and country. Not freedom, not democracy, not the Australian way of life, not parliamentary rule, but for God, Queen and country, for empire building. Now, it's no exaggeration to say that the anti-war movement and the anti-conscription movement in Australia during World War I, which defeated the introduction of conscription, was responsible for saving another 60,000 young Australian men from being sacrificed on the European killing fields for the glory of God, King and country. Because let's not forget, in New Zealand, which was part of the Anzac Alliance, where they had conscription, 6% of all adult men in New Zealand died. The casualty rate was horrific. And it is no exaggeration to say, without sections of the trade union movement, sections of the Roman Catholic Church led by Archbishop Mannix, the women's movement, and a number of radical groups, which included the Industrial Workers of the World and socialist groups around the country, that if conscription had been introduced, another 60,000 young Australians would have been sacrificed on the European killing fields for the glory of God, King and country. So, isn't it important that we tell the whole history? So at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday the 11th of November, that's right, Tuesday the 11th of November, a small group will be gathering outside St. Paul's Cathedral. You'll see the banners. Come and join us to honour those men and women who've been written out of the history books, who've been written out of this commemorations which will occur in this country over the next 4 years, whose sacrifices not only need to be remembered, but need to be remembered by the establishment and creation of monuments across this country, because it is an obscenity that the current government and opposition are using the hysteria surrounding the celebrations, not commemorations, celebrations around World War One, to actually promote militarism and war in 2014. So it's about time that, as we did on the 5th of August, that we meet again. We meet again under a new symbol which has been created to honour these men and women, the red poppy with the white feather underneath the red poppy. And if you want to get more information, go to the Anarchism Institute website, anarchistmedia.org. Go for the It's Time leaflet. Look at the posters that we've set up. Download them. Use them in your part of the country. Organise a commemoration on Armistice Day, the day when peace was declared and war came to an end on the 11th of November, 1918. When the curtain was pulled down on a dirty little trade war fought by workers at either end of a bayonet for the glory of God, King and Country. And don't think it's just the 60,000 dead. Another 60,000 young Australians of the 420,000 which went across died within 10 years of returning, and many more bore the psychological and physical scars of their service till the day they died. So join us 10:30 to 11:30, Tuesday, the 11th of November, Armistice Day, outside St. Paul's Cathedral. We'll pause for 2 minutes at 11 a.m. to honour those who died. But we'll be there to honour all those who fought to ensure that more Australians didn't die on the European killing fields for the glory of God, King and Country. So that's two things. And while we're at it, don't forget the 3rd of December. That's right, the 3rd of December, the Anarchist Media Institute reclaim the radical spirit of the Eureka Rebellion celebrations, which will be held in Ballarat to mark the 160th anniversary of the Eureka Revolt. Because the 160th anniversary of the Eureka Revolt provides an opportunity, that's right, an opportunity to reassess the significance of what occurred in Ballarat in 1854. It's both ironic and depressing that in 2014, the events that have helped to shape the consciousness of both a people and a nation are still dismissed by many as a revolt against mining licences. It's important, like we regain the forgotten radical history of Tunaminawe and Morbohina, Truganini, Planabina and Pitarana, who are involved in wars of resistance against the occupying colonial forces, that we reclaim the radical history of World War One, when hundreds of thousands of Australians banded together to ensure that conscription was not introduced in this country. It's important that we reclaim the radical spirit of 1854. That's right, the radical spirit of 1854. And what's Eureka about? Eureka is about four things. Direct action, not the mealy-mouthed direct action Abbott talks about with climate change. It's about direct democracy, not the mealy-mouthed parliamentary elections which we're subjected to in this country, where we're forced by law to cast a ballot at each and every election. It's about internationalism. It's about solidarity. And if you really want to understand the Eureka Rebellion, all we need to do is remember the Eureka Oath. We swear, not some of us swear, but we swear, that's we the people, swear by the Southern Cross. Why the Southern Cross? It was the symbol of the new land that the miners found themselves in, because you only see the Southern Cross in the Southern Hemisphere. We swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other. Truly by each other. That's what solidarity is about. It's not about we stand truly by each white man, but truly by each other. We swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties. The Eureka Rebels believed they were born with inalienable rights which no government, which no corporation, which no employer could remove. And if we move forward 160 years, we can see how the Australian Constitution allows governments to remove inalienable rights. Like the Eureka Rebels, we refuse to allow governments to remove these inalienable rights we are all born with. So on the 3rd of December, which is a Wednesday, I encourage you to take the day off. Tell the boss you'll work on Melbourne Cup Day. Tell the boss you'll work on Christmas Day, because it means, you know, if you're not a Christian. Tell the boss you'll work on the Queen's birthday. But I think the important thing is that join us, 4 a.m., Eureka Park at the corner of Eureka and Stall Street in Ballarat, and take part in all the Reclaim the Radical Spirit of the Eureka Rebellion celebrations events which we've organised. Go to the website, anarchistmedia.org. Have a look at the program. Join us for the full program. Come along to the Eureka Australia Day dinner that evening at 7:30 p.m. And this year, we will be making a large effort to show the similarities between the West Papuan independence movement for West Papuan struggle for independence and freedom and the struggle which was waged by the Eureka miners. And there will be a significant contingent of West Papuan activists who will be joining us on the 3rd of December to take part in all of the different aspects of the celebration. And as we get close to the day, I'll go through them. Now, if you'd like a seat, obviously, if you don't want a seat, don't bother booking. But if you'd like a seat, if you're old or you've got young people, you'd like a seat at the Eureka dinner, and there's only 90 seats, give us a ring on 0439 395 489. Book a seat. Book a seat by going to anarchistage@yahoo.com. anarchistage@yahoo.com. If you haven't got a telephone, you haven't got internet, don't despair. You can always write to us at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. For the Eureka dinner, there'll be two speakers, yours truly, and Jacob Rumbiak, the Foreign Minister for the West Papuan Government. So join us on the day. Great day. And why? Why? Because at 5 o'clock, when dawn breaks over the very site the Eureka battle took place at the corner of Eureka and Stall Street, where the Eureka stockade was, you can see simultaneously in the sky the Southern Cross, the radical emblem of the Eureka miners, which continues to play a part in radical Australia, and the Morning Star, the flag of the West Papuan independence movement. Both are there on the horizon, the Southern Cross and the Morning Star. Now, talking about the West Papuan independence activists, now, as you know, the Anarchist Institute initiated a campaign to pay the rent for an office for the West Papuan government. And we had a little bit of trouble with the rent collective over the last few months, but I'd like to reassure all our listeners that because of the wonderful response, we now have enough money to pay the rent till at least January, if not further. We need a few more people to join the rent collective. And I encourage you to pop into the office if you're in Melbourne. Suite 211, 838 Collins Street. That's right, Collins Street in Docklands. Now, the office manager is Amos Wayngai. If you want to go along, you can always ring them up first. Tell them you'll be there at what time and you'll be looked after. You can ring them 039-049-9590. You can go to their website, DFAIT.com. Federal Republic of West Papua DFAIT.org. DFAIT, D-F-A-I-T, dot Federal Republic of West Papua. Now, on the 17th of December, on the Anarchist World This Week, we'll be holding a special program where we'll be inviting a number of West Papuan activists into the studio, and our aim is to increase the number of people in the West Papua Independence Movement Rent Collective. We need a number of more people because the office has now been open for at least, over six months. It's been very successful. It's acted as a focus for their struggles. It is staffed by volunteers. Nobody receives a cent. Every cent that goes to the Rent Collective is used to pay the rent, which is over $2,250 per month. It's a secure office. And all those of you who are in the Rent Collective should be very proud of the fact that it was your contributions, a dollar a day, which has ensured that one of the most dispossessed and marginalised people on the planet, 200 kilometres from Darwin, now have an office from which to promote the cause of West Papuan independence. So there's also a Christmas party on Sunday the 21st of December, which we'll tell you more about, which we're inviting members of the Rent Collective to, but you should receive some material about that soon, and you will receive material about thanking you for putting in that extra effort to ensure that over the next 3 months there are no issues as far as the rent is concerned. So it's extraordinary to see the amount of goodwill and financial support that's gone to the West Papua Independence Movement. Now, if you'd like to join the Rent Collective, it's simple. It's $30 a month, or you can put in a yearly amount, $360 up front. If you can't do $30 a month, you can do a one-off donation. And if you want information about the West Papuan Rent Collective, you can phone me on 0439 395 489. You can go to anarchistmedia.org, or you can go to the website of the Federal Republic of West Papua.org. So a lot of things happening. This is one of the initiatives which we've been involved in this year. It's been an exceptionally busy year. Lots of things happening. And those people who think you can't fight City Hall, well, you can fight City Hall as long as you become, you know, you organise and you keep going. And talking about fighting City Hall, don't forget, resist Murdoch's Minions legislative onslaught. Go to the website, murdochsminion.org. On the 7th of November, that's this Friday at midday in Melbourne, first Friday of the month, we'll be meeting on the quadrangle outside the Herald and Weekly Times building at 40 City Road, South Bank, to demand Murdoch gives Australia their $882 million plus interest back. Now, we've had a lot of issues regarding being on so-called private property, because the property belongs to a bird of a similar feather. Birds of a feather flock together. The Dexus Group. Now, what do the Dexus Group and Murdoch have in common? Well, they're both tardy in paying tax. The Dexus Group pays 5% tax, although they own over $19 billion of prime commercial real estate, including the Herald Weekly Times buildings in Melbourne. 5% tax. But they are amateurs. Total amateurs in comparison to News Corporation and Foxtel. And the major reason we're outside the Murdoch building is not because we give a shit about their biased, inconsequential reporting analysis. Anybody with one synapse in neuron knows what the Murdoch press is all about. It's about ensuring that Mr. Murdoch and his minions continue not to pay tax and make lots and lots of money courtesy of the Australian taxpayer. When you talk about leaners, the major leaners in this country are the corporations. The multinational corporations pay less than $40 billion tax. They pay less than about 17% of the total tax take. And people like News Corporation received an $882 million tax refund in 2013 at the height of the federal election. Now, while the federal treasurer will say all the right things to his G20 mates about how important it is to reform the international financial system to ensure transnational corporations like Google and Apple pay income tax, he has refused consistently to comment about what is arguably the greatest legal fraud that has been perpetrated on the Australian people since Federation in 1901. During the federal election in 2013, during the federal election campaign in 2013, the federal court handed down a decision that will go down in the annals of Australian legal history as legalised grand theft. Because what they do is legal, what do you do is criminal, and I'll go into that in a minute. Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation was able to legally engineer a $2 billion tax loss in Australia in 2000-2001, while depositing a $2 billion profit from its international operations and overseas tax havens. Fact. By transferring a few pieces of paper and unwinding a few paper transactions, they're able to claim a $600 million tax refund on their Australian operations. The Federal Court of Australia, in its wisdom, added interest to the paper refund, turning a paper shuffle into $882 million Australian tax office cash refund to News Corporation in July 2013. Fact. At the same time the federal court handed this windfall, News Corporations and its subsidiaries declared war on the Labor Party and the Greens, and they did all they could to get Murdoch's minion, toxic Tony Abbott, the man, the climate change denier, the climate change flat earther, elected as Prime Minister of Australia. The Australian Tax Office, in its wisdom, decided not to lodge an appeal against its biggest cash payout in Australian history. To rub salt into the wound, Mr. Murdoch, News Corporation fame, wasn't even willing to share his $882 million cash payout with News Corporation shareholders or his employees. In classic Murdoch style, the $882 million was transferred into 21st Century Fox to ensure he received the lion's share of the payout. Fact. The losers in this paper-shuffling legal fraud are the Australian people. While Rupert Murdoch pocketed an amount of money that would pay the pensions of 45,000 Australians for a year, the Fourth Estate, the Abbott-led government, and the Shorten-led opposition have let this legal travesty go to the keeper. It's only us, Resist Murdoch's minions, which consistently raises this point by going to the Herald and Weekly Times office at 40 City Road, Melbourne, at midday for an hour. We bear witness to the fact. When the legal system does not have the ammunition to protect the people from legalised grand theft, and when our parliamentary representatives refuse to upset the puppet masters, the people need to take extra parliamentary action to ensure the $882 million that was legally stolen from them is returned to them. And that's why we bear witness. For 1 hour, we cause consternation by peacefully assembling in the quadrangle outside the Herald and Weekly Times. Private security guards, Victoria Police, are there consistently attempting to move us on. Because under the law, they can receive $882 million tax refund, and 21st Century Fox pays 1% tax under the current laws. But we, a few dozen people who stand in the quadrangle of what is claimed to be private property outside the Herald and Weekly Times building, out Southgate in Melbourne, we are the criminals. We are the ones who are threatened with charges. We are the ones who they want to move on, peacefully assembling to bear witness to what is one of the largest and most significant legal travesties we have seen in this country. They're not the criminals. We are the criminals, because we stand on private property for 1 hour, once a month, to highlight this travesty, to highlight that real power in this country doesn't lie in Parliament, that it lies in the boardrooms of national and transnational corporations. We encourage all Australians to think twice about purchasing products from News Corporation, 21st Century Fox, and every other Murdoch-owned subsidiary in Australia and overseas. You have the power to bring the giant down in this David and Goliath struggle. Starve the Murdoch beanstalk by not fertilising it with your money. Until the power transnational corporations exercise over every aspect of our lives is challenged, the Rupert Murdochs of the world will continue to usurp the will of the people by using the money and power they exercise to promote their interests before the interests of the Australian people and the interests of the nation as a whole. While we jump up and down about the G20 conference in Brisbane, let's not forget that it's not those at the G20 conference who have the interests of the people they represent at heart. They have the interests of that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication at heart. That's what the G20 conference is about. It's not about ensuring that everybody shares in the Commonwealth. It's not about to ensure that there is a safety net for people around the globe. It is not there to ensure that wealth is distributed equitably. The G20 is about ensuring the Rupert Murdochs of the world, the Leaners, the 21st Century Foxes, News Corporation, continue not to pull their weight in this country. Every journey begins with a first step. I'm encouraging you to take that first step in the long journey to reclaim your inalienable rights and liberties by denying the Murdoch juggernaut the food it needs to survive and prosper. Your money. That's right, your money. Log on to www.murdochsminion.org and plough through the 15 pages of assets owned by Murdoch. If you discover any of your money is finding its way into Murdoch's pockets, stop buying, watching or listening to that product until Murdoch gives back the $882 million he legally stole from the Australian people. The ball's in your court. Go ahead, make your day. Stop fertilising the Murdoch juggernaut. Look, I know that most of you can't come on the 7th of November at midday on Friday, and most of you won't be able to come at midday on Friday the 5th of December to join us outside 40 City Road, South Bank in Melbourne. I know that most of you listening to this program outside of Melbourne won't actually do much to organise vigils to bear witness to this fact in your part of Australia. But there is something you can do. There is something you can do from the privacy of your own home. There is something you can do, and you don't have to worry about police or private security goons. You can stop fertilizing the Murdoch beanstalk. You would be amazed at how many assets News Corporation and 21st Century Fox own in this country. You would be amazed at how your hard-earned dollars are helping to keep the puppet masters in power. Because it's not Abbott who determines parliamentary policy. It's not the Liberal National Party or the Labor Party that determines parliamentary policy and what laws go through parliament and what doesn't. It is the parliamentary puppet masters, and the biggest leader of them all is Mr. Rupert Murdoch, who loves to put his boot into ministry public housing tenants, who loves to denigrate people on social security benefits, including those on disabled pensions, who loves to put their boots into trade union activists, and who loves to denigrate and humiliate radical activists in this country. It is their bread and butter. It is their bread and butter as they prepare the wicket, a wicket which is friendly to their minion, Abbott and the Liberal National Party. So why are you wasting your life bankrolling these people? You have the power not to bankroll them. It may mean you can't watch this movie or that movie or not this pilot television program or that. It may mean that you can got to get rid of your Foxtel television contract. But the reality is, do you really want to give these people your money? Do you really want these people to do this? Do you really want to do this? Because if you do, well, then keep buying the stuff. If you don't, well, it's time. Isn't it time that you took a stand? That's right. Took a stand. That's right. Took a stand today. Because if you don't, nothing will ever change. I'm not asking you to talk to us. I'm not asking you to see us. Could you continue? All right. So you need to continue to do what you're doing. Because if you don't, nothing's going to change. If you continue to do what you're doing, nothing is going to change. You can be an activist in many ways. You don't have to be on the barricades. You don't have to take a prominent position. But you can look at where your money is going. You can look at what's happening to that money. You can look at how your money is actually bankrolling the very people who are promoting ideas and concepts which are diametrically opposed to what you believe in. This is what they rely on. They rely on people not joining the dots. That's what it's about. They rely on people not knowing what's going on. That's the issue on a day-to-day basis. So think about it. Think about it. Join the growing movement to ensure that the leaners no longer are leaners. Because shouldn't it be that we all pitch in, not just those least able to pitch in? Listen to the Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Now, there are parliamentary elections galore. Victoria on the 29th of November, Queensland early next year, New South Wales, and they're all, jumping up and down. Labor, Liberal, Labor, National, Liberal, Greens, Labor, National, Liberal.
Well,
think about what's happening. Think about what parliamentary democracy is all about. Parliamentary democracy is essentially 2 minutes of illusory power. Every 3 to 4 years in Australia, under Section 245 of the Australian Electoral Act, where every elector, is required to vote at each election, you are asked to give a tick to a system of government which makes you a stranger in your own land. That's right, a stranger in your own land. The essence, the difference between parliamentary or representative democracy and direct democracy is who makes the decision. At each election, you give a signed blank check to a parliamentary representative to make decisions for you for the next 3 to 4 years. And irrespective of whether they change their political colours, irrespective of whether they don't keep one of their promises, irrespective of whether they lie to you, there is nothing you can do, apart from revolution, obviously, and rebellion, until the next election where you give a signed blank check to another representative, hoping against hope that they will maintain their promises. That's the nature of parliamentary rule. And to make matters worse, real power doesn't lie in Parliament. As we've seen, real power in this country lies in the boardrooms of national and transnational corporations who set the parliamentary agenda day in and day out, week in and week out, year in and year out. They set the parliamentary agenda for you. So I'm not telling you not to vote. What I'm saying to you is, look at the process. Isn't it time for reform? Reform, radical reform, that word radical again. Reform is to make things better. A radical is somebody who uses extreme measures to make things better, not to make things worse. Because at election time, some people think about what they're doing, who they're voting for, who they put their faith in. Parliamentary democracy is like religion. It's about faith. There's nothing there. You can hold them accountable. And as I've said before, here I am, an anarchist, trying to reform Parliament instead of getting rid of it and replacing it with a federation of community and workplace councils based on direct democratic principles where wealth is held in common. Simple reforms, the power of recall. If electors had the power in between elections to call a fresh election. For example, if 20% of electors during a 3-month period were unhappy with the performance of their parliamentary representative, call a fresh election. That representative would understand that their primary allegiance is not to the political party which pre-selected them for the seat, but their primary allegiance is to the people, because the people can remove them from office by holding a fresh election. Not a radical idea. Many states in the United States of America and in Switzerland, many cantons in Switzerland, have mechanisms by which you can recall non-performing politicians. And another thing we can do, simple reform, citizens-initiated referendums. And if you're concerned that those with power will manipulate the way citizens-initiated referendums go, legislate to ensure that both sides get exactly the same amount of money to promote their ideas. Simple. Put power back in the hands of the people. Two simple reforms, two simple ways of making things better. Not radical, not revolutionary. You can do them under current constitutional arrangements. No bloodshed, no sweat. You don't even have to stop work and be declared a criminal because you've withdrawn your labour. Citizens initiate referendums. Power of recall. Simple. Make it decent. For a change. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au asiasnocked.org.au. Don't despair. ASIO, ASIS knocked on your door. You've been dragged away, had a heart attack, nature calls, you've got diarrhea. The Anarchist World This Week is podcast. You can access it for the next 6 to 8 weeks by going to anarchist, 3cr.org.au. Yes, you can write to me. Yes, I still respond to letters. I don't get many, but I still get some. Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. You can email us at anarchistage@yahoo.com. anarchistage@yahoo.com. Don't forget, 9th of November, Murchison, to pay our respects to Francesco Fantin, 10 a.m. Picnic at about 12:30. Join us on the day. 11th of November, if you're in Melbourne, outside St. Paul's Cathedral at the corner of Swanson and Flinders Street in Melbourne, 10:30 to 11:30, to show our respects for those men and women involved in the anti-conscription movement whose efforts led to the defeat of conscription referendums during World War I, so another 60,000 young Australians weren't sacrificed on the European killing fields in a dirty little trade war fought by workers at either end of a bayonet for the glory of God, King and Country. Don't forget the 7th of November, again, if you're in Melbourne. Everything's happening in Melbourne, I think. 7th of November, midday, 40 City Road, South Bank. Join us. Bear silent and peaceful witness and see the state react. See the state react. See them protect the leaners. See what it's really like to be a criminal because you're bearing witness to the greatest legal fraud that's occurred since Federation. Thank you for listening to the Anarchist World This Week on the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Listening to the Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station next week.
Evil minds that plot destruction. Death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national, and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.